And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the series debut of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan. I'm Michael Linenbaum, and I am now sending it right off to you, Sasha. Take it away.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the opening debut of Nerdtastic Nerdy Things that I will be talking about for whoever knows how long. But here we are. And today we're going to be talking about some TV shows that were really good and maybe canceled too soon. Some shows that are just really great recommendations and you should check them out regardless. And maybe some shows that should have ended a long time ago, but still haven't.
Like Walking Dead?
Sure, yeah. Walking Dead is a great example of a show that needs to end. But I'm not really into... I know the comic book nerd is not into The Walking Dead, shocker, but...
I'm not either. Like, I stopped after season two because it was just too much.
I'm a superhero nerd as opposed to anything else.
Well,
so
it's too much. It's too many characters, and it runs really slow. Like, the pacing is really slow, and it just really turned me off from it. So
I haven't watched an episode, but I'm not a zombie fan. The closest thing I ever came to enjoying anything related to zombies was iZombie, and to an extension, sort of Grimm, but we'll talk about Grimm in a second. But in relation to TV shows that will not end, let us congratulate Game of Thrones and Supernatural for finally ending.
Which I just started watching Game of Thrones from the start of the weekend because I have HBO Go now on my PlayStation 4. I'll just go in the corner now and just sit there in shame.
It's lame anyway.
I mean, but it's not bad.
It's lame.
It's not... I'm not going to say it's, like, I agree with you. It's definitely overrated. I think people are overblowing the show. But for me watching it, it's not a bad watch. And I can actually sit down and at least have it, especially on in the background when I'm working, like when I'm editing this episode.
Well, in terms of shows that I think need to end but haven't yet, let us draw our attention back to the golden days of 2004. That is when the show got started. It started off as a spin-off, another show. And no, I'm not talking about Law & Order SVU. I am talking about NCIS. While an incredible show, which tackles the idea of Navy cops who deal with issues with the Navy and the Marine Corps, and NCIS stands for Naval Criminal Investigative Service and was an offshoot of JAG, starring Mark Harmon. Mark Harmon recently had some controversy after Polly Perrette, who played Abby, the forensic scientist on the show for many, many years, tweeted that she was really thankful for people that, like, still miss her character, but she was not coming back because she was actually genuinely terrified of Mark Harmon. And that, to me, is really concerning, that somebody would tweet that publicly, and the fact that, not to say that Mark Harmon doesn't deserve this, we don't know the full story, he probably does, but it's very telling that a person who was literally on this show from the very beginning, we're talking a TV show that is like 16 seasons in, Lord Almighty, that's too many, but the show was really good. It started off with the character of Leroy Jethro Gibbs, who is kind of the boss and the mystery surrounding who he really is. And I say mystery of who he really is like it's some big puzzle. And it's not really that grand of a mystery, but it's kind of like a psychological, why is he the way he is? There was Dr. Donald Mallard. Yes, his name is, he goes by the nickname Ducky. And then a couple of, you know, other characters that came and went, like Caitlin Todd. Then there was Agent Timothy McGee, who was added. So it was my favorite character. And then you have the great and wonderful Ziva David, and we miss her terribly. But throughout the course of the show, for those that know, the show has gone through many different changes. Caitlin Todd's character was left. The actress actually left, and then later on went on to be a main character in the show called Rosalian Isles. Also recommend. And then Ziva David was brought in. Ziva stayed for many, many seasons. Then she left. And another character named Ellie Bishop was brought in. Later on, Michael Weatherly, who played Anthony DiNozzo, who's also there from the very beginning of the show, also decides to leave. And he is replaced by one of the most annoying characters I have ever seen on television. I'm not even sorry. He's supposed to be, like, this suave undercover agent dude, but jeez Louise, can he's just annoying. And some of his, he's supposed to be, like, the Tony stand-in, so he's supposed to be funny and quirky, but he just comes off as really annoying. His name is Agent Torres. And then finally, Abby Shudo, who was the goth forensic scientist, who was from the show from the very beginning, also leaves the show. And the fact that you've had, two major actors who have left after so many years, I think this is telling that, you know, NCIS is not the same show it used to be, to the point where they're legit recycling plots now. I kid you not. I watched an episode that had, you know, a particular beginning, middle, and end, and I was like, wait, this is literally the same exact story with slightly different characters and background with the exact same ending as a previous episode. If you're recycling your own plots, it's time to go or hire new writers or do something different. And while I love NCIS and I do recommend the show overall, I think it's time to end it. And if you'd like to hear about how I would end NCIS, you can, at the end of the show, we'll pitch all the social media stuff and you can come and harass me on there and ask me all those questions.
Why don't you pitch it now?
All right, fine. So you can reach me more. What?
Pitch how you would end it. This is a podcast, after all. You could talk about it and keep the conversation going on social media.
I don't know. I like to keep them on there. I like to keep people guessing. And I don't want to spoil too much about the show for people that might not have seen it. But I think everybody at this point knows NCIS. It's been on the air forever. So, all right.
Yeah, I used to watch it when they used to air it before Monday Night Raw on the USA Network. I think they're back to doing that again.
Oh, yeah.
And then, actually, Michael Weatherly, what show did he originally come from? What show gave him kind of his start?
Oh, it was that weird one-season show, isn't it? That was, like, weirdly supernatural? Is that what I'm thinking of?
Two seasons on Fox with Jessica Alba, Dark Angel.
Oh, yeah. I briefly watched that.
He was the, if you remember... he was the guy who was the eyes.
Yeah, well, everybody needs a nerd in a chair.
I love that show. And the way that show got canceled really pissed me off.
See Veronica Mars. This is a show that... So, anyway, we'll get to Veronica Mars in a bit. But NCIS is a great show. It really is. But it needs to end. And I think the only realistic way to end it is either to kill off Agent Gibbs or to have him permanently retire.
Didn't they try that?
Yeah, but that was for plot convenience as opposed to a realistic ending. And there was a two-parter where he, like, kind of retires, but it was always really obvious, especially from, like, the opening of the following season, that there's no way in hell Gibbs was actually going to stay retired. But at this point, you know, it's many years later. He's lost a lot of people. He lost his boss/former girlfriend. He lost his mentor. Ducky's nearing retirement age, and we haven't really seen a lot of the actor, David McCullough, who plays Ducky because he's, like, in his 80s and wants to spend time with his family. So I think it's time. And right now the team had, like, this would be a great opportunity to bring back Michael Weatherly as Tony DiNozzo, bring back Ziva David, which they did in this last season finale, and just have that be the wrap-up ending. Give Tony and Ziva their much-needed happy ending. Either make Tony the new Gibbs, the new head of the team, or even if you want to keep Michael, you know, give it smaller, give Tim the job. Because ever since Tony retired, Timothy McGee is the senior most field agent, except he's not treated like that. He's still treated like a proby nerd, which, don't get me wrong, he is adorable and wonderful, and I absolutely love him. But this was a chance to let the character grow. And they kind of forgot about him. And sure, we got some really lovely storylines about him and his wife and then having kids and everything. And that's wonderful. But you can do so much more with him, especially now that he is a senior field agent. And I think NCIS needs to bring in a probie for the last season. Give Agent Torres, like, a job training new NCIS agents or something like that. Ellie Bishop can stay on because Ellie Bishop is great, and maybe give her a decent love interest. And bring in a probie, somebody that can, like, who's maybe a younger, greener version of McGee, and have that kind of be, like, the next generation taking over. Because the next generation already took over in the medical examiner's office, with Ducky kind of stepping back, and Jimmy Palmer taking on that role. So, with Abby gone, with Ducky gone, it's time for Gibbs to go! So, that is my ideal end for NCIS. But, Michael, you brought up something interesting. The shows that were killed too soon. There's two shows that I really put in this, well, three shows, I take that back, that deserve in this category. That is, oh man, nope, I take it back. There's four now. Keeps coming up. But one show that was very
Recent, there's 17 now. It's 20.
it's a lot. But one of the most recent shows that was canceled that I really enjoyed was called The Gifted, which was on Fox, which I know it's on Fox, so it was doomed from the beginning. But I loved this show because it finally... So first of all, it's a totally not Marvel show in the sense that this is a Fox production of the elements that Fox has a right to. Yes, we're talking about mutants. So the entire show finally did something that I have been dying to see, but have yet to see in any of the X-Men movies, with some exception. And that is how mutants exist in this universe. Because we know mutants exist. We've seen very little interaction because they're always in their cute little bubble at the Xavier school. But we rarely see how life is like for other mutants. Like, not everybody goes to Xavier's. Not everybody can go to Xavier's. And in a world without the X-Men, what happens? And so the first season is about this family who, the children basically come out as mutants, and we're living in like a mutant apartheid America kind of a situation. And the family has to flee, and the dad is like a prosecutor who prosecutes mutants for crimes. And they're introduced to kind of like the resistance, quote unquote, but they're an underground mutant network, and there's like bad guys after them. And it went for two seasons. And there was so much potential for it. And I think the writers were a little bit lost as to how to progress the story and what to do with all the characters. And it was kind of like they were finding their way in season two. I really think they were. And had they had one more or two more seasons, they would have been able to, like, really breach the threshold. Because the first season, it's a little bit more isolated. And it's like they're always in that same place. They're in Atlanta. With the second season, they have more people, there's more players in the game, there's laws, we get a little bit more insight into the Purifiers, which is an anti-mutant, pro-human group. So it is a show that was definitely canceled too soon, a show that I hope Disney Plus decides to do something with when they get the chance, because there is a lot of potential to explore these elements, and maybe this will finally motivate Disney to give me a movie about Genosha, but that's an entire separate conversation. And so, I definitely recommend The Gifted, just because if you like shows that are not political, but are technically political, and you're sick of two-party politics, this is a good show because it's the sociological dynamics of this new universe are really intriguing. And plus, as an X-Men nerd, so many Easter eggs. It's great. But shows that should have had a full season ending but didn't is a show called Grimm. Have you heard of this one, Michael?
I've heard of the show, never watched it.
So this is a kind of like a Teen Wolf supernatural-esque kind of show where you have your werewolves and things. Well, not exactly, but you have a Grimm based off the concept of the Brothers Grimm and their stories. But in this case, the Grimm is a person who is kind of has like heightened senses and has this unique ability to see something called Vessin, which are like Wolfman kind of creatures that exist from, like, the old Brothers Grimm fairy tales, sort of. It's a little hard to explain now that I'm starting to explain it. But that's the basic that's kind of the basic premise. What's really cool is that it takes place in the stupid Portland, Oregon. I'm from Portland, Maine, so I'm allowed to make fun of the other Portland, especially because I learned that the only reason there is a Portland, Oregon is because of a freaking coin toss. Yeah, coin toss.
So, heads is Portland and tails is Maine.
No, it was Portland or Boston, as it turns out. Either way. So, like, why couldn't it be Boston's problem, but it had to be mine. Anyway, but Grimm takes place in Portland, Oregon, which completely coincidentally is also where descendants of the Brothers Grimm live. And so the story is kind of this main character, Nick Burkhart, he's a detective, and he's navigating this universe that he now finds himself in, where nobody's who they say they are, and there are these creatures called Wesen, and some are good, and some are bad, and if you really like German, this is definitely a show for you. There's a lot of German, for obvious reasons, and it's a character-driven show, as opposed to the likes of Teen Wolf and Supernatural, which are driven by the plots of the season, or the villain of the week, once upon a time. So it's all about the characters, who's a good character, and there is, each season does have a set storyline and a set, like, I don't want to say bad guys, because they're not always all bad guys, but an antagonist of sorts. But it's all about the characters themselves and the things that they go through that is the priority. And while the bad guys are interesting, they're not nearly as interesting as the characters interacting and what new Wesen you're going to meet this week. And is this like, when are the other people around him going to figure out that these creatures exist, these people exist? And it's a lot of fun. I'm really bummed that it only managed to get like a 13 episode like final season, but I'm glad I got a final season to at least wrap up some of the stories, even if like I wish they had a little bit more space so that they could have fleshed out the ending just a little bit more. But that is definitely a show where, you know, if you like sci-fi and supernatural, but you like fun characters and you don't want to be frightened or all the time, it can get a little gory sometimes, but it's definitely enjoyable, and it's not, the supernatural aspects never come at the expense of characters and their interactions and their like experiences. The concept of Wesen and the good guys and bad guys and the royals and the resistance and whoever else, they're all awesome and they're really fun to think about, but the characters is what really attracted me to the show, and it's why it's, I think at this point, one of my most rewatched shows. Anytime I can't find something to watch, I always go back to Grimm just because it's so much fun.
That's kind of like me with Spartacus and Batman the Animated Series. I constantly go back to watching those shows all the time.
We'll have to do an entire episode just on like animated shows and like cartoons that we still watch today that hold up, you know, 20 years, 30 years later. But a show that has definitely held up for another show that has held up pretty well despite, you know, time, and the two shows actually that are still very relevant even though they've been over for a while. The first is Veronica Mars, which y'all have heard of Veronica Mars at this point. Anybody who has discovered Kristen Bell through The Good Place should know about Veronica Mars because, but Veronica Mars is a 3-season, 1-movie, soon-to-be-another-season show universe that looked a little bit at, like, the concept of class warfare and, like, inequality between classes, and, but it's told in a semi-teen-friendly environment that is set in the early 2000s, because that's when the show was filmed, and it's like a kid, it's a teenager's, I think, first introduction to, like, noir. Because noir is very popular for, you know, the black and white, the broad walked through my door and there's a case and I have to solve it. But the show starts with Veronica, whose father, a former chief, no, who was he? He was a sheriff of a town called Neptune in California, who then becomes a private detective, and how Veronica is now in a new environment for her. She used to be, like, top tier, like, super popular girl. She was best friend with the richest family in Neptune, and now she's the exact opposite. Whatever prestige or, like, recognition she had for being a sheriff's daughter is gone, and she is now a pariah in the school. And the very first thing you see or learn about Veronica Mars is she helps a kid who is duct taped to a flagpole because, you know, high school and early 2000s, a lot of people had issues with flagpoles in early 2000s, apparently. But Veronica goes through struggles. She goes through ups and downs. She makes mistakes. And she goes through trauma. And the characters are so, so well written up until season three. And the mystery is really interesting. But I love the fact, this is what I wish Jessica Jones would have done, where you had episodes where Veronica would deal with a case of a kid's missing dad or getting dirt on somebody's parents or a lost dog. But throughout the majority of the show, there is a very specific plot that drives it. In this case of season one, it's Veronica dealing with the murder of her best friend, who is also the sister of her ex-boyfriend. And the struggle that she goes through to figure out what really happened, even though everybody thinks they know what happened. I'm trying to, like, entice people without, like, giving away too much. But if you like murder mysteries a la that are not quite as cookie cutter, or, you know, Veronica is like a company. It's like if Nancy Drew discovered heavy metal. I think that's the way to explain Veronica Mars. Because at the beginning, Veronica is very Nancy Drew, minus the mystery solving. She's cute, she has long blonde hair, she wears pink dresses. And then it's like the kid discovers heavy metal. And like the stereotype of, you know, of ye olden days where people were like, don't let your children get into rock music, it'll ruin them. But you kind of see that kind of transformation with Veronica. But it's not a rock music transformation. It's a things that hit the fan and everything kind of goes in a tizzy. And then you get this, like, incredible character who is now trying to navigate this new person that she is while also dealing with the old people of her life that don't know this new Veronica or maybe had never met the old Veronica. And so it's a lot of fun. It does tackle some very real issues, sometimes better than others. Sometimes not as great, but it is definitely one of those shows where you always click on the next episode. You're like, okay, what's going to happen next? What's she going to find out about the murder of Lily Kane? What is she going to find out about the bus crash? Like, who are all these new characters? So that's definitely a fun one. And the fact that it is coming back, thanks to the success of the movie, thanks to the fact that Rob Thomas, who also created iZombie, can't let go. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. All the trailers for it look incredible. I mean, we could talk about different elements of all of these shows for an entire hour on their own, I think. But the other show that I was thinking about was Leverage. Did you ever hear about this one, Michael?
I've heard of Leverage. I will be brutally honest. I don't get to watch a lot of television. But I've heard of the shows. So
the shows are great. Leverage was interesting in the fact that it was also very formulaic. There were episodes and there's an overreaching arc and an antagonist for the whole season, to some degree, but it's kind of like a little bit on the same element of Veronica Mars. It's about a show that, yeah, about a group of people that help others. In this case, these people are, they're criminals. They're criminals. They're a hitter, a grifter, a hacker, a thief, and a mastermind. And the mastermind is a former insurance agent who he's a drunk. He's not had the best life. His son passed away because the insurance company that he worked for wouldn't pay for this experimental treatment. because they have a policy of not to pay claims or something along those lines. And the very first episode is this guy comes to him and says, hey, my airplane designs were stolen. I've got a ragtag team who's going to help me, you know, get these plans back. And these characters are three of the other characters that we eventually meet out of five. They're the hitter, the hacker, and the thief. And the thief is a perky blonde girl who, it's like, I don't know how to explain Parker, but Parker is kind of like if the frilliest, sweetest person you can think of in your head basically had no problems with blowing shit up. Excuse me, blowing things up. So she's very, like, if you met her on the street, she just comes off as a cold blonde. But in reality, she can be cold. She can also be very sweet and very nice. But she likes to steal things. That's just how she is. Then you have Elliot, who is the hitter, and he is like a retrieval specialist. He's an army guy or former armed forces of some sort type of guy, very tough guy. But as the story progresses, as the seasons go on, you learn that all of these characters have different layers to them. One of Elliot's other layers is that he actually likes to cook and he likes music and, you know, he's not just a guy that's like super tough and likes to hit people. Then you have the hacker, who's Alec Hardison, and Hardison is pretty semi-generic nerd at first. A little self-centered because, you know, age of the geek, and he's, like, the best hacker in the world. And then, so the first episode is they retrieve these airplane designs with the help of Nate, who's the mastermind. But the guy who hired Nate and all of these characters then decides he doesn't want to pay them, and he decides to kill them. And so they come back together, and they're like, okay, we got to get revenge. And Nate says, I know the perfect person who's going to help win this whole thing for us. Her name is Sophie, and Sophie is an actress. And we use the word actress very loosely because she can't actually act. The first time you see her, she is doing the single worst rendition of the Lady Macbeth's soliloquy from the Scottish play. And she's awful. It's like if I gave a random teenager who has never heard of Shakespeare and told them to read the lines with emotion and be Lady Macbeth, this is what they came up. And the others are like, nope, 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 nope. We can't use her. We're going to be ruined. This is terrible. Turns out she can act when it's an act. Get it?
Yep.
So she's actually really good. She can do accents. She takes on these different personas. And so everything works out. The gang kind of decides that, like, huh, we kind of like doing this whole helping people thing and getting big payouts. And even if we don't even, we're not even sure if we like each other overall, but we can kind of see where this goes. And so the next 4 or 5 seasons as them, you know, helping people, sometimes getting into trouble, getting out of trouble, but it's all about these cons that they put on. And so the very first con is a really interesting interpretation of the Nigerian job, which, have you heard of this whole Nigerian scam?
Nope.
Okay, so the idea is...
Are you talking about the prince thing? With the
uh-huh.
Emails? Oh, yeah. Yeah, that goes right into the trash with me.
So then there's, like, the one in the email, but there's also that person that comes to you on the street. He says, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. My life is in shambles. I am a prince from a foreign nation. Please give me some money, and I'll pay you back. And Veronica Mars actually also has an episode about this. Look at that. Everything comes full circle. But that's the beginning of that very – that's in that very first episode. And so you learn about different cons, you learn about how they trick people, and nothing is ever what it seems, which is really amazing. But for some reason, TNT started getting sick of the show, and instead of just outright canceling it, they're like, oh, we'll give it one more season. But then they didn't promote the show, and they kept changing the time that it was on like, literally, actually, no, I take that back. That wasn't even in the fifth season. I think that was the fourth season. And they were, it just felt like they were purposefully trying to lower the ratings of this show, which I honestly don't understand why, because the show was so much fun, and it was very different from other shows on the air at the time. I think the show ended in 2012, maybe? And the last season, I think, suffered a little bit because they knew it was the last season, so they just, like, didn't... Like, there were times where they could have done a little bit more than they did. But if you're not feeling very supported by the, you know, the studio that is helping you produce it, I can understand why there were some issues with the writing. But those are definitely... I don't know. I don't understand why a studio would take a show that is... You know, maybe it wasn't the highest rated show. Maybe it wasn't getting the best ratings and the most popular. But if it's not going well, then just cancel it. Why string everybody along and delay until you kind of just kill the show itself? It seems like a lot more work and a lot more effort needed. But I don't know. But the show is definitely funny. It's definitely quirky. And if we're going to talk about quirky TV shows, there's one kind of very specific quirky crime-related show that I do want to mention. That show is called Psych.
I remember Psych. I watched bits and pieces of it, but I never actually watched it.
Psych was fun. It got a little bit like... It could get cringy at times, and it could definitely get, like, there were some secondhand embarrassment issues, but the show was a lot of fun, and it did really seem like the cast really, just like with Leverage, like, and with Veronica Mars, I think you can, and with Grimm, you can tell, I think, when a cast really enjoys the show that they're working on. I think it shows really well in the acting and then the dynamics between the characters. So,
well, that also comes into the play because they did come back and did a movie.
And they're coming back to do another movie. They're just now trying to figure out, like, scheduling, and Timothy Omenson was, like, in the hospital for a while, and the so they're trying to, like, it's going to happen. So that just shows you the commitment and love and devotion people have for these shows. So, Psych, for those that don't know, and if you really don't know, have you been living under a rock?
Yes.
Psych is a USA Network show, lasted 8 seasons, I believe, and it's about a guy named Sean Spencer, whose dad is a retired cop, and his best friend, Burton Guster, and played by Dual Hill, and... They're like, sometimes Sean is not the greatest protagonist because he's not the most considerate person. But I think that's what also makes him really interesting. So his dad basically trained him from the get-go to be like Sherlock Holmes level detective, like notices everything, like really intuitive, and like he sees things when other people can't. And the episode... Each episode starts with, like, a flashback to his childhood, and then we flash forward to the present. So, in the flashback that the episode starts with, we see Sean and his dad at a diner, and Sean really wants a piece of chocolate cake. But his dad won't give him the chocolate cake. So he says, okay, if you want your chocolate cake, you have to work for it. So how many hats are in the room? So the kid has to close his eyes and just remember how many hats there are in the room. Afterwards, he says, okay, can I get my chocolate cake now? And the waitress is floored. She's like, oh, my God, that's incredible. And the dad is just like, yeah, it's okay. He can have his chocolate cake. Just not very supportive. But then we flash forward, and Sean is in a semi-compromising position with a, I don't want to use the word ditz, but not the sharpest tool in the shed of a girl. And he's also coincidentally watching the news that's talking about a recent burglary. And like any good Samaritan, he just happens to figure out who the criminal is. And he reports the tip. So then he shows up to the precinct to collect his reward. And he has a conversation with one of the uniformed cops on duty, who he, like, I think he overhears her talking about a psychic. And then the detective, two detectives, one is played by Timothy Olmanson, Carlton Lassiter. They take him into the, what's it called? The interrogation room. Haha. And they say that he couldn't possibly be, like, this good of a detective or anything like that. He must be in on it. So Sean is facing jail time, and it's part panic, part creative thinking, and he tells them that, no, he's actually a psychic. And he demonstrates his, quote-unquote, psychic talents. I'm using air quotes, but you can't see. To basically tell them things that he noticed. That, like, he saw another uniformed cop practicing a waltz, so he assumes it's probably for a wedding, and he just happens to be right, because it's logic, because why else would you randomly, you know, learn choreographed ballroom dance moves? Unless you're me. And so, he gets kind of thrown into this one investigation, because they're like, oh, well, if you're so brilliant, you can help us solve this case. And he ends up roping his best friend, Burton Guster, into joining him. And at the end of the episode, they form a detective agency called Psyche. And I don't want to use the word con man, because he's not really a con man, even though he's kind of conning people. But it's pretty much a con, because it just is. He's pretending to be a psychic, and sometimes embarrassingly, but sometimes, most of the time, with, you know, good intention and practicality, he helps solve these cases. But even though he's not technically a psychic, he does have really unique observation skills and intuition and skills that he uses to deduce who the bad guy is or what the issue is. And he really does do an incredible job. And I think some of my favorite episodes is actually when he tackles the elusive yin/yang killer, Zuh. And it's interesting. There's a lot of really awesome guest stars. Cary Elwes guest starred on the show a couple of times as the, I don't even know how to describe him. He basically plays a man named Pierre Despero. And this man is either a criminal or a special agent or both. He's one of those characters where, like, you think you have him pinned down, and then next time he comes and appears, he throws everything into a tizzy and changes everything around, and everything you knew gets thrown in a blender, and it's completely different. So everything that you thought you knew and everything that, like, you could have guessed from the clues that you were already given just went out the window. In case you guys haven't noticed, I really like crime shows. I think more or less we've mentioned four crime shows?
62. Yeah, sounds right. Yeah.
I mean, there's a bajillion of them, but a lot of them are formulaic, and a lot of them get really redundant, but I think it's cool when a show tries to do something different. Just like The Mentalist, just like Psych, where you have this consultant who's really good at these powers of observation, or you have Grimm, where it's still kind of police procedure, but it's supernatural police procedure, or you have NCIS, where you're dealing with a very specific pool of the Navy and the Marine Corps and the unique challenges that come with that. All right, now I think we still have a little bit more time to talk about kind of more recent TV shows that are still either on the air or have recently finished that you should check out. The first is, I'm cheating slightly just because it's so good. It's not it's technically finished, but it came out very recently, and it's Supernatural-esque, and it's a miniseries, so it's only for the one season, and it's an adaptation of Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman's Good Omens and the Nice and Accurate Prophecies of Agnes Nutter. And so Good Omens is about an angel and a demon who have low-key been friends for 6,000 years, and how they try to prevent the apocalypse. something like an apocalypse to really spice up your day. And it's really cool, but before you watch the show, I do recommend reading the one-star reviews. And I never recommend anybody read one-star reviews, but these one-star reviews are the funniest thing you will read, because you have upset atheists that are complaining because Neil Gaiman is pushing the creationist myth in a fictional show. Okay. And then you have...
Oh, don't worry. Remember when Dogma came out?
No idea what that is.
Dogma is the Kevin Smith movie.
Mm-mm.
Stars Alan Rickman, Chris Rock, Alanis Morissette was God, George Carlin played Cardinal Glick.
What's it called?
Dogma. Came out in like 1999, and it also stars Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. And the funny thing about the movie is that before it starts, it has a couple of like slides that it plays, pretty much saying like, you know, apologizing to the Catholic Church in advance, because I mean it's essentially flipping religion on its head with the movie, and then they make fun of the platypus, and then they apologize for all the platypus fans out there in the world, and you know.
Okay, so be prepared, be prepared to be offended. And then, so the one-star reviews, you have the upset atheist, which is, you know, that, because they really need an excuse. I'm just making fun of everybody, I promise. I'll be making fun of Christians in a second, hold tight. And then you have the upset Christians, who are like, this is blasphemy, and this is heresy, and blah, 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 it's fiction. Like,
you want blasphemy? You want blasphemy? Try practicing what you preach. Oh, wait, you don't.
Yeah, who does that? But anyway, I promise if you continue on with watching my podcast, I will be making fun of all religions equally. Just give me time.
You mean listening?
What did I say?
Watching? I mean, you can watch. I mean, you can watch the little dot thing moves to the side.
If you continue tuning in, as if this is live. But anyway, as a Jewish person who, you know, believes in God, I will say that I found Good Omens to be hilarious. It's not like Mel Brooks level funny, and it's not like Monty Python level satire, but it's funny, and it's, I think they have a female narrator who is technically the voice of God, and her comments are hilarious. The interactions and the actors are having a ball. Like, everybody is really into their characters. Even the child actors aren't terrible.
Also, when you have like your top two actors are Michael Sheen
and David Tennant.
It's like, what's not to hate? You know, it's like those two guys are really good, and especially the fact that you have I'm trying to think, because Michael Sheen was in the Underworld movies and he played the lead werewolf, Lucian.
Okay, and he was also the guy from Frost Nixon.
Yeah, and then
and then
you had David Tennant, who is the Doctor, and then also is currently Scrooge McDuck in their DuckTales reboot.
Please, let us give honor to Scrooge McDuck, because it is the only time David Tennant is actually allowed to use his natural Scottish accent. And what's really funny is, when you watch it, there are times, when you watch Good Omens, there are times where either intentionally or unintentionally, I am really not sure, because David Tennant really is that good of an actor, when little parts of his Scottish accent do come out, and part of me thinks it was intentional, just for added emphasis or something. But Michael Sheen plays Aziraphale, who is an angel, and David Tennant plays Crowley, who is a demon. And for some reason, they are the only poor schmucks that have to they're basically sent to Earth to mess around. Because, you know, I didn't know the Earth was small enough that you only needed one angel and one demon wreaking havoc, like, constantly on Earth. Because it seems like all the other demons kind of pop up here and there to do some bad, and then they go back down. And then the angels pop down for some shenanigans, and they go up. But it's interesting because the dynamics between the characters are really amazing. It definitely has a beginning, middle, and end. Michael Sheen and David Tennant do an incredible job. And, you know, anybody who's seen them in anything knows that they're already, like, incredible actors. But it's just continuation of the magic that is their talent, because they take very deliberate liberties with their characters, and how they've interpreted these characters is really funny. And from what I understood, because I have not read the book, and this definitely has inspired me to read the book, because I'm one of those people that watches the movie and then reads the book. I'm sorry. I did it with Harry Potter. I have no regrets.
I couldn't get into Harry Potter. I tried. I really did.
Harry Potter's overrated. Rated. Okay, now duck for the torches and pitchforks. I mean, there you go. We could just talk about how annoying Harry Potter is. But anyway.
Yeah, that's another episode.
Yeah, seriously,
we could spend the full hour right there. Maybe more.
Probably more. You could write an entire book. And actually, there have been. If you were ever fortunate enough to go to the Spy Museum, please purchase a book titled The Spy Tactics of Harry Potter. There you go. But no, Good Omens is fun because the characters are enjoying themselves. They're taking really incredible liberties with those characters. And it's one of those shows where, like, you have to rewatch it 5 times, and each time you pick up on something different. And I think that is the mark of a great show. And the fact that, first of all, it inspired me to read a book, or read the book that it's adapted from, is awesome. The fact that as an adaptation, I think this should be the poster child for book-to-movie adaptations. Because it does what other shows and other, like, movies that have tried to adapt books don't do. And that's, first of all, actually understand the source material. In this case, it helps that one of the co-authors of the book actually creates this miniseries, Neil Gaiman, because Terry Pratchett passed away. And I guess one of his, like, in one of his last conversations with Neil Gaiman, he wanted Neil to create an adaptation or help support a good adaptation of Good Omens. And I think it works really well. It's genuinely a good adaptation in the sense that it remembers the true essence of the book. And again, this is from what I've heard from other people who have read the book.
From it's what I understand, I was reading an article about it, but apparently Neil Gaiman's dying wish was that he wanted
Harry Pratchett, Neil Gaiman.
Oh, Harry
still
Pratchett,
has.
My bad. Yep. I got him reversed, my bad. Harry Pratchett wanted the as his dying wish, he wanted the wanted it to be adapted for TV. And
yep.
He actually wrote the scripts. Or at least the outlines for the scripts.
It's entirely possible.
Well, because you heard about the Good Omens debut. And this is how I read about it. Did you hear about the Good Omens debut, which is like a rarity for a TV show to get a debut like this?
No, what happened?
So they did a screening in a theater. And Ooh. They actually had one seat in the front, and it had Harry's hat and scarf.
Harry.
That's why I said Harry.
Harry. Harry.
Oh, Terry. I'm sorry. Can't hear half the time, but his hat and his scarf were in the seat.
Aww.
And it's like the only time that they would like have a seat like that, and that's actually how I read the whole thing about, like, he wrote the scripts, or at least the screenway adaptions, so that way they could be put on TV, because that was like his dying wish. He wants it on TV.
I think most TV book to movie adaptations work better as TV shows and miniseries. Like, that's why Shadowhunters, despite, like, all the changes that it made, is actually a good show, or was a good show. That's why the movie failed for, well, several reasons. That's why the Harry Potter movies, if you really rewatch them, really are not that good. With maybe a couple exceptions. But So I'm actually, I did not know that he, you know, worked on some of the script. I just know that it was, like, his last wish that he really, and it's, like, it works really well as a one-season adaptation. And the other reason why it really succeeds is because the person that, one of the people that created it, the book, the people that wrote the TV show, are the people that knew it best, and that's the actual creators. And that, I think, is really, really helpful. I think that's more helpful than anything else. Because, and then the other part, it's not a direct book to screen. I'm not going to be that you know, I'm sure there was somebody that was, like, reading the book as they were watching the episodes and was, like, taking notes on all the things that were different. But I don't think that a adaptation needs to follow the book 100%. I think that there are some things that you have to change because it's a completely different medium. And in this case, the changes that, as far as I understood, that were made for specific reasons. To flesh out the characters more, to give context, because Neil Gaiman realized that one of the things in episode 3, there's this kind of, like, I don't want to call it a montage because there's no music, but there's, like, several scenes in the first, like, really half an hour of the episode of just Crowley and Aziraphale and their interactions throughout the centuries. So the first is at the Garden of Eden, the second time is in Rome, then you have the crucifixion of Jesus, then you have
I just sent you a text message with the article.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah, that's probably why you paused, because you just see this text message coming up.
Like, what is this random thing?
That's the article that I was just referring to.
Cool. And then, what else? They have an episode during the French, the French Revolution. You have kind of what looks to be like something out of, you know, the Edwardian era, so like the early 1800s, based off my historical knowledge of clothing and costumes, which I'm very proud of. Thank you very much. And then you have the 40s, the 60s, and I think a little bit of the 80s. And there's so many reasons to watch this show. If you're a fan of Queen, they play all of the good Queen songs. Even I'm in Love with a Car. So there's a lot of amazing things that are going on in this show. And the final show that I really want to recommend, which is already renewed for, I think, a third and a fourth season, and that is The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Because we have to end this on a Jewish note, as is fitting, since we are both Jewish. But...
Well, Chaim. Sorry.
So,
you set me up. I'm sorry. I'm going to go back to my corner now.
The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Again, if you have not heard of the show, have you been living under a big rock? And this is...
Yes.
Get out from under the rock and watch this beautiful, beautiful, chutzpah-inducing, like, hilarity of Jewishness.
All right, I'm going to go back to binge-watching Game of Thrones now.
Sit! Quiet, you. So, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is a story set in New York City in the 1950s. And it stars, the main character is Midge Maisel, and she's Jewish, and it's literally about her wanting to be a stand-up comedian and how she gets there. But it's so funny. Even when she's not on stage, you're laughing because the one-liners are great. The acting is great. Tony Shalhoub plays her dad. Like, come on, what more motivation do you need?
Dude, you got the guy from Monk playing the dad?
Yep. And
that actually works.
One of my favorite scenes in the entire, there's two, I think, scenes that I think are the top. The first is in the second or third episode where Midge and her husband, Midge's husband leaves her because she's funnier than him. Literally, that is why he leaves her. I am not even kidding. She is funnier than he is. And she's smarter than he is. But anyway, so the two, their parents decide that they need to have a dinner. And so Midge's dad is a professor at Columbia. He's a math guy. Her husband, Joel's dad, owns a textile factory. Thank you to the creators of the show for not making their parents doctors and lawyers. The universe thanks you. But they have dinner, and Joel's dad apparently rescued several Jews during the Holocaust, and he got them out of Germany. And I don't want to spoil the line just because it's so funny, but this is why Jews are allowed a certain type of humor and other people are not. So it's absolutely amazing. And then the second scene that I really love is actually in the following season, where Midge and her parents are in Paris. And Midge, by coincidence or fate, ends up in a gay bar in Paris.
Kinky.
Surprisingly not. But hilarious, because she cannot help herself when a microphone is involved. So she realizes that there's a group of drag queens, and she thinks they're women at first, and then she's like, oh my god, they're men. Because I think one had like a scarf stuck in his pocket of his pants or something like that. But she gets on stage, and there's an American woman, and she recommends... oh no, what was that author that put her head in the oven, the poet? Oh no, I literally know her name. But basically, Midge is telling the story of, there we go, Sylvia Plath. But no, she's not telling the story of Sylvia Plath. She's literally rehashing for us everything that happened in the previous season. Her husband left her for a really dumb secretary. And this woman is translating all of this into French. And the fact that this woman is able to translate at the speed of light while Midge is talking a mile a minute like I have been for the last hour.
I couldn't tell. I mean,
I know. It's news to you. Is hilarious. It's incredible. And the jokes that she makes at the men dressed as women are funny as heck and not at all homophobic or transphobic. Like, they're not. They're just funny. And both seasons are hilarious. And there's so much Jewish humor in it. And there's so much Jewish honesty at life of being Jewish. And anybody who does not like this show has something wrong with them. And it's either that they don't have a sense of humor or they just don't like Jews. Or maybe both. I don't know, but this show is amazing. I think there's a lot of room to grow. There's a lot more room to make fun of so many other aspects of her life. And they do really capture the historical accuracy of being Jewish in this time period, minus the anti-Semitism. Because we make fun of ourselves enough. We don't need to watch it. So it's funny. It definitely captures the Jewish experience of the 1950s. And I think it's just a pleasure to watch. And you might have heard the jokes 5 times, but you're going to laugh every time, because that is the mark of a true comedian. If they can tell you the same joke 5 times and you laugh every time, that's a talent. And that's a skill that I'm going to say now, most comedians I see today don't have. Actually, I don't think most comedians today have that much talent at all, unless it involves making inappropriate jokes.
Well, something to throw out there in that sense is keep in mind that you have to, like you said, you know, if you could tell a joke 5 times and make it people laugh every time, you know, you could still tell the same joke 5 times, but how is it being delivered? If they sell the same joke, but they change the delivery slightly to make the same people laugh every time, that's the true talent right there.
And I say this as a fan, as you know, somebody who's Jewish, somebody who's a fan of comedy. And I think comedy and humor have a lot of room to be funny. And you can be funny about racism. You can be funny about homophobia. You can be funny about anything without those things actually being racist, homophobic, or anti-Semitic.
Well, you do know that you've heard the one thing that George Carlin's always said.
Probably, but continue.
There's no such thing as curse words, or there's no such thing as bad language. There's just bad intentions.
I think that's fair.
And do you know who's always echoed those as well? Louis Black.
Mm.
Chris Rock. Eddie Murphy. Mm-hmm. Richard Pryor. Like, they've all...
Mel Brooks.
Yeah, well... Mel Brooks is different. Mel Brooks, you know, he can do jokes and have it be like PG-13, and you're like, wow, that was...
I think that, like, you can
There Although he's overly admitted you can't do Blazing Saddles today, which is very sad.
Well, yeah. I mean, somebody wanted to cancel the producers because it was normalizing Nazis.
You do know that Mel Brooks plays the Nazi.
Yeah, I don't think that matters. It's still, it doesn't matter. He also, Mel Brooks also dressed up as Hitler and did the Hitler rap, which if you have not seen on YouTube, please do.
Wasn't that in History of the World Part 1?
It didn't make it in, but there is a music video that exists. I think he wanted to put it in, but then ended up cutting it.
Huh.
It kind of fits a little bit more with To Be or Not To Be, actually, as opposed to... I think we should do next episode. We should definitely just have an entire thing talking about Mel Brooks movies.
I have the Mel Brooks collection.
I do not, but I have memorized all of them. At least all the good ones. So, at this point, I do hope that you have enjoyed yourselves thoroughly. If you've managed to stick here for the entirety of this podcast, mazel tov to you for tolerating me.
Sorry, I turned it off after 5 seconds.
But if you want to ask me questions, if you're curious about any of the shows that I mentioned or where you can watch them, or if you have specific opinions or questions about the shows that I mentioned or what my opinions on those subjects, you can find me at geekgirl101.tumblr.com. Yes, I'm on Tumblr. Don't kill me. That's geekgirl101.tumblr.com. Or Geeky Captain on Instagram, although my Instagram is just mostly me dressed as a Jewish superhero. I don't really have much beyond that. But thank you so much for listening, and we will see. We will tune in next time, hopefully.
And, of course, real quick, you can find the archive for this show at txhthockey.com. Yes, it's a hockey website that has other stuff on it, too. How ironic. txhthockey.com/nerdy-notions. So that is also where you can find the archive, the most recent episodes, all that cool jazz. So with that, Sasha, take us out.
Thank you for listening. Tune in next time. Nerdy Notions. We'll come back next time.